Comments made on Sarah Spectives are those of the individuals and do not represent Sarah Tech Corporation, its staff, management, or board of directions, or third-party resellers. Good afternoon / evening, everyone, and welcome to This Month in Tech for, well, we're in July, but we're talking about June on Sarah Spectives at a slightly different time. We have an international audience with us this month, and it's a pleasure to have them all. I'll introduce them in just a second, but want to thank everyone for joining us at the slightly different time, and I'm sure our audience members appreciate it, as I'm sure they would not want to be up in the middle of the night to be doing Sarah Spectives with all of us. So thanks very much for all of that. We have, as I mentioned, quite a few folks here with us today. The first is Brian Hargen, who is an access technology consultant for the past 12 years. He has been the sole program on the JWare line of products, JTools and JTunes, which are centered around the JAWS for Windows screen reader. He's also provided training to individuals and groups on many screen readers, including JAWS and System Access. He co-owns the internet radio station Team FM. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much. It's absolutely wonderful to be here, and thank you for the opportunity.
You know, I think I mentioned to Brian via Facebook a while ago, geez, it'd be great to meet you virtually, and sure enough, here you are. So, you know,
and there we are.
Well, thanks again.
Expected.
Stuart Lawler is manager of the Rehabilitation Training Center at the National Council. For the Blind of Ireland. NCBI. The center is based in. I apologize, Stuart. Everything is sort of messed up here. It's based in the center's head office in Dublin. Stuart coordinates and manages a rehabilitation program which caters to people with sight loss ranging between the ages of 18 and 65. As well as managing the center and its training programs, Stuart is responsible for researching accessible mobile solutions for MCBI.
The accessible event is now running. If live audio or radio streaming is enabled, then you are now Sarah Spectives, This Month in Tech with you.
Hello.
Hello, we are under attack.
we're getting some serious echo.
Hang on a second.
This is where we say, Houston, we
have a problem. Is that any better?
No, it's pretty bad.
Hang on a second.
It's pretty bad. Steve, it's the typical feedback.
Yeah, I know.
From test.
Why does that change? Hang on a sec.
We ask our audience to hang on with us for one moment while we get this straightened out, and we'll be back to our program.
Oh, beg your pardon. I'm sorry about this.
No problem.
Okay, let's try that.
Can you bring your mic down just a little bit, bro?
You're over mod.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can do that. Is that any better?
Maybe a little more.
Okay, let's try this. Is this any better?
I think that's about right. Others?
Yeah.
Yep.
We're good.
Sounds fine.
So let's go ahead and give it back to Steve Sausen, who will take it from there.
All right. Well, here we are again, and thanks for hanging in with us. We were in the middle of introducing Stuart Lawler, who I apologize to most sincerely. He's worked extensively with mobile carriers in Ireland to bring accessible technology to mobile handsets at an affordable cost. He has over 13 years of experience in the assistive technology industry and has participated in a number of European Union-funded projects with MCBI. He describes himself as a tech addict, which is a great description. I kind of like that. In his free time, he enjoys reading, walking, catching up with friends, audio production, and internet radio. He lives in Dublin with his fiance, who is also will be
who will represent Ireland in the Paralympic Games in London. That's very, very cool. So, Stuart, thanks for joining us.
Cheers, Steve, and it's very nice to be here, and thanks to everybody at Zerotech for asking me.
Steve Nutt runs a company in the UK called Computer Room Services, which sells a wide variety of goods and services to their blind worldwide, including computer and mobile phone support and training via phone, Skype, and face-to-face within the UK. He's a self-described geek and loves mobile communications and what they can do for the blind. Steve, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Hello, everybody, and glad to be on.
And we have Lanny Watson, who is the Director of Accessibility at Nomenza. Am I pronouncing that wrong? I probably am.
Nomenza, yeah.
And the Chair of the British Computer Association for the Blind, of the Blind. She works with companies around the world to create and implement digital inclusion strategies. And she is a W3C invited expert working on HTML5 accessibility. She's also on the Access Talk podcast. She's a quarter of that show. And according to her Twitter profile, she's a screen reader user, a book addict, and there's something here about tequila, which is also fascinating to know. Good stuff. I could use some of that right about now. Thanks, everyone, for joining us, and again, my apologies for the introduction. For those that don't know, I'm Steve Sawson, and we also have in the wings helping out here Lisa, and of course, Joe is bringing us all of the pages, which will be coming up on your screens if you're logged into the Accessible event. Let's go ahead and just get started. The first thing we're going to talk about, last month we talked a lot about Apple, and I think if there were any criticisms about last month's podcast, it was that it was very Apple-heavy. Well, this month it's a little bit different. A lot of non-Apple stuff going on. So it's interesting how these things balance out. To start us off is, of course, Microsoft. Microsoft's Windows 8 preview. What's in and what's out? And maybe we should talk just really briefly about what is it? What, obviously, it's their new operating system, but, you know, if you had to summarize in, a minute or less, what is going to be the major differences in Windows 8 that is going to impact consumers?
Everything.
That's a fantastic answer.
That's about right, really.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys. I've been using it for a couple of three months now, and most of that time I've been lost. But I think there's some good stuff coming with it, but it's a big change. It's a lot like moving
I heard this morning when I was listening to a podcast or two about this was that in terms of the way that the keyboard user would interact with Windows 8 is as different as Windows 3.1 was to 95. Do you think that's fair, Leonie? Because you've used it and I haven't.
That was, in fact, actually just what I was on the verge of saying when you said as much. It's just like that change from 3.1 to 95, yep.
I was kind of reading some of the stuff around it. I haven't actually used it myself, but one of the things I was thinking was that this whole new idea of the Metro apps, and we're moving away from the classic kind of Windows desktop idea. And I think whether you're blind or low vision or not, that seems to be going to be taking a bit of getting used to for everybody as a general kind of a usability thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I haven't used it at all yet, but I'm assuming, Leonie, that you're using a beta of JAWS, because JAWS currently doesn't support Windows 8, neither does WindowEyes, but they're all working on it, of course.
I'm not actually using JAWS at all. I've got a tablet running Windows 8 that I'm using Narrator on.
Oh, right, okay.
That's improved.
It's good enough for everyday use, is it?
Not quite. I will say that I haven't, on the tablet, I haven't got the latest consumer preview that came out a week or two back. It's the one that came out in February.
But that is one of the big differences, right, is Narrator?
Yeah, in Windows 8 in general, yeah. So I'm hoping they've kind of sorted out a few things in the latest beta release, because so from the February version on a tablet, it's really, really difficult to use. I didn't like it at all. But on the laptop, I've been using NVDA and Narrator, and actually really, really liking both of those. So
one of the things I'm interested in, you know, as we kind of move towards the final version, is the idea of sort of coordinating or syncing our apps between Windows 8 and Windows Mobile 8 when it comes out. And it seems that that's really what they're trying to push, that kind of cross-platform user experience from your PC to maybe your laptop or your tablet or your phone. And I suppose I'm curious to see how that might work for us as well.
You mean what Android and iOS have been doing and we're getting it already?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, they have and they haven't. I think what's unique about this, iOS has sort of been doing this, but even with regard to Android, there's no desktop equivalent to it, is there? I mean, the idea, if I'm understanding it right, is that you can get an app, use it on your Windows PC, and also use that same app on your tablet, on your phone, on whatever, and have everything sort of syncing between the apps, right?
Not from Google, no, but there is a brilliant app called Companion Link, and if you are an Outlook user, you can seamlessly sync Outlook on your desktop with, and that's contacts, phone, notes, the lot, with your Android phone without any problem, and wirelessly too.
It really is fascinating how things are becoming a lot more seamless. I remember there used to be, I used to carry a bag of cables to be able to interface one device to another, and then tons of adapters that I always left one at home when it was the one I needed. And, you know, just to do simple tasks like transfer a document from my note taker to my PC or whatever. And now all of that is sort of seamless and almost invisible.
That's companionlink.com, Joe, if you want the notes.
One thing I think Microsoft is doing really nicely is making loads of resources available to their app developers or people who want to develop apps for Windows 8 about accessibility. So they're making like a whole toolkit full of stuff that people can use just right out of the box that's accessible by default, same as Apple have done for you know, their iOS app development. And in the App Store for Microsoft, as I understand it, there's going to be a an accessibility sort of tick box. So if you think your app is accessible, you can say as much. And then as consumers, we'll be able to just filter out by accessible apps, which will be quite handy, I think.
Microsoft, I'm sure, have seen the kind of impact that you know, that there is a disability market out there who have significant spending power and who need to be taken seriously, and it looks like they are beginning to really see us as on a level playing field.
Well, they needed to, didn't they? Because they screwed up pretty badly with Windows Phone 7 in terms of accessibility.
Oh, yeah,
so, you know,
it didn't exist, albeit very little for low vision, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, as if all of that wasn't enough, Microsoft certainly is stepping up its game in terms of accessibility and in terms of the Metro apps, which will sync between all of the different devices. Microsoft has revealed its own new hardware device. They've, of course, been in hardware for a while. This isn't the first hardware thingy that they've made. They've made keyboards and mice and all sorts of other things. But now they're going to be making a tablet. And as far as I know, pricing has not yet been released, but called the Surface Tablet. This is going to be I don't dare say this, but like a Microsoft version of an iPad. It'll run Windows 8, but it will essentially function as a tablet the way that the Apple iPad functions as a tablet for iOS or any one of the numerous Android tablets functions. So it's sort of their foray into the tablet arena. I'm not sure exactly when this is to be released, but the exciting thing is that, as Lanny mentioned, of course, Narrator has far expanded capabilities, and of course, with the Metro apps and so forth. Any thoughts about accessibility that we might find on this new Surface tablet?
I'd be interested to get a look at one of the articles I read about it. They spoke particularly about the keyboard, you know, being a part of the case. And it kind of reminded me of some of the covers people have for their tablets at the moment that have keyboards built into the cases. So they seem to be going the sort of button route, or at least catering for those people who want to use buttons, which I thought was interesting.
Exactly. Either or. The case does have the keyboard built in as sort of a standard feature. They've designed it in a way that the case not only protects the device, but it has the keyboard and serves as a stand for the device. So kind of, all in one in its standard case.
Well, I just received my birthday present, which was an Acer Transformer Prime, and that also has a keyboard dock all built in, but it doesn't have a case. But the keyboard is actually, you plug into the tablet, so it's not Bluetooth, and it just looks like a netbook, you know, when you close it down, but slimmer. So it's really quite nice. So, yeah, I mean, the future's exciting. I can't wait to see Microsoft's tablet.
It's going to be interesting, I think, to see whether the fact that they're developing their own hardware is going to kind of close that loop, because a lot of what people say has made Apple products so great is that they've got complete control over the end-to-end system, whereas Microsoft have always had to deal with kind of different hardware, different drivers. You know, we all know the story. So it's going to be quite interesting to see what happens now they close that loop. In terms of accessibility, particularly, to see if it'll be a really improved experience.
Any other thoughts on Windows 8 or the Microsoft Surface tablet, which is going to really shake things up, I think, a little bit?
The only thing I can contribute to this is that certainly Freedom Scientific, from an accessibility perspective, are saying that they're already working on their training materials so that the transition isn't going to be perhaps as great as was the case going back to our analogy of 3.1 and 95. So they are going to be making their help resources available, their Daisy books, and also webinars. And I'm sure other screen reader vendors and developers will do their own similar projects too. So because they're coming in at this very early stage, the screen reader developers, I'm sure once Windows 8 is released and there are official products to support it, hopefully we as blind people should be in good shape in terms of learning it.
I think it's going to be very interesting. It's going to be interesting by the end of this year. We have, iOS 6. We'll have probably Android Jelly Bean. We're going to have Windows 8, Windows Mobile 8. I mean, there's going to be huge choice and lots of things for all of us tech geeks to play with.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I just saw a note in the text area about Windows 8 support of Braille, and it does not look like that is in place at present. Which, for that's people who rely on it to do their jobs and or who are deafblind, that's a rather large consideration.
Yeah.
I think that is very unfortunate.
That's obviously built into the... Sorry, Lainey, go on.
No, no, go for it, Brian.
I was saying that's obviously going to be the case with anything that's built into Windows, but from the screen reader standpoint, obviously Braille support will be there, I would imagine.
Is there going to be any issues with drivers? I don't know anything about third-party drivers, but I remember when Vista came out, especially the 64-bit editions, the big panic was that couldn't find drivers for a lot of printers and scanners, and people were sort of pulled up short by that.
Well, Freedom Scientific will probably cause more problems because they'll want everyone to digitally sign their drivers and charge everyone a fortune. So WindowEyes will just carry on working with the drivers, whether they're signed or not, which is quite nice. We'll plug there.
It's just a pity it won't work with the web.
It will.
Really?
It will.
But I mean, in terms of actual hardware drivers, if you have a scanner or a printer, will those things work, or do you have to get new drivers from the manufacturer? Or
I'm sure there will be problems. I've no doubt there's going to be, especially since this is a major transformation, I suppose. I think there will be driver issues. And I think I saw something on the release preview page that sort of alluded to something about, that you should check with your hardware manufacturer before you go to install this to make sure that there is a driver available for your product. So I guess it's still very much kind of happening.
And you'll probably get Microsoft Wizzy Upgrade Advisor, won't you, which you'll be able to run to tell you.
So definitely check with your manufacturers if you have a scanner that you depend on The time to find out that you can no longer depend on it is not after you install Windows 8. Make sure you find out sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I had a lot of calls about this when 64-bit 7 came out and also Vista, that people got it and installed it, and then when they went to turn on their scanners, it didn't work, or a printer didn't work. And, you know, for many people, that's critical technology that they were suddenly without and didn't have, of course, the budget to just run out and buy another one. So, I mean, it's worth a quick phone call, or perhaps a not-so-quick phone call, depending on how long you are placed on hold. In other news, we have, of course, a bunch of stuff on the Android front, the big thing being the new version of its operating system, Jelly Bean. And I have to say that there's all kinds of new features in Jelly Bean. We'll talk about some of those in just a second. But I think the coolest feature is just the name. I love the name of the various Android releases. They always make me so hungry. And if ever I get to choose my dream job, I want to be the guy that comes up with, you know, the next food thing that will be the Android version. Any thoughts or does anyone want to talk about some of the new features and functionalities in Jelly Bean?
Well, yeah, Jelly Bean, they've kind of bowed to Apple pressure a little bit, because the swipes gestures are the same as iPhone, and they're double tap now rather than single tap in Explore by Touch. But there's also going to be a new feature called Brailleback, which is TalkBack is a speech for Android, and Brailleback will be the Braille interface. Haven't seen Brailleback yet, but Jelly Bean is really good.
There's a lot of new accessibility APIs, from what I understand.
Indeed,
Yeah. There's a lot of changes in it.
Yeah, and apparently it will tell you, you know, that there are YouTube demos that Alan Viverett, who's one of the Google engineers, did, showing HTML5, and if you code it badly, what TalkBack will do, and if you code it well, what TalkBack will do, and various things like that. So let's hope, because apparently the web views now are very accessible, so I hear.
That's so important, I think, isn't it? Because often developers of sites and applications, they don't know necessarily that something is not accessible just because they don't know. They need educating. And so if
indeed,
there are
yes.
YouTube videos yeah. like that, that can be all to the good.
Yeah, for me, one of the kind of very nifty things I saw on one of the articles, I think at the end of the article, was that if you want to pair your Jelly Bean phone or tablet to a Bluetooth speaker, you can just tap it against it. That was very funky. So
I'd like to see
Apple do that.
This is the phones that have near field communication built in, and apparently, if you have NFC built into your phone, you can just tap the phone against the speaker and it will pair it.
There's a lot of innovative stuff with Android, and you know, the other thing is just the energy building around it. I remember even a year ago, people were saying, well, Android is just not a viable solution for blind people, and it's getting there, but Google's not really committed, and it's a waste of money. And there was sort of people interested, but a lot of naysayers. And I mean, we've come a long way, even in the past year, from that point to a device that, sure, is still evolving, but it's evolving for everyone at this point, not just for, you know, not just in terms of accessibility, but for everyone, and it's become a totally viable option.
What I also love about Google is that the if you join the Eyes Free list, that's Eyes-Free, EYES-Free list on Google Groups, the Google developers of TalkBack and the accessibility parts of Android are actually on the list as well, and they feed back to us directly.
And that's critical. It's great that they have that contact. Another thing that came out is the Nexus Q, which is an Android computer. At least that's how some are describing it. Joe will, I'm sure, put the article up if it's not there already. But essentially, this is a thing that is Android-powered. It's a very small device, and it can connect to various media-type devices. For example, a television. It can connect. It has a SD card input. It has various sound outputs. The idea behind this thing is that you can sort of use it as a media center type situation. And for me, what's exciting about that is if you consider that the operating system has accessibility built in, you can sort of have an accessible media center out of the box if you get this Nexus Q. So kind of fun to look at. It's one more thing to put on my list of stuff my wife probably won't let me buy by the end of the year.
And the Nexus 7 as well, the new 7-inch tablet as well. That looks quite good too, as a low-budget tablet. And, of course, we should always give a plug to that Android show, shouldn't we, Joe? Which is, of course, the Android show to listen to, podcast to listen to.
And absolutely. On that Android show, rather quickly, you'll be with us talking about Google I.O. because, jealous of jealous, they both have all the Google swag that was given out at Moscone, which would be the new Nexus 7 tablet, the Q, as Steve just commented on, and I think they got a Galaxy Nexus and a Chrome Samsung Chromebook. So lots of stuff to talk about. And JJ and I talking about Droid 4. And I believe we have an interview with Mozilla on Firefox for Android. So a lot of great Android news coming.
And I've been using Firefox as well, and the nightly builds of Firefox, and it's now accessible with Explore by Touch, and it really is pretty damn good.
Yeah, it's come an incredible long way. As Brian mentioned, the fact that web views are accessible, I think, is a huge step forward. That's been a huge problem for Android for a while now, and I've seemed to have overcome that. And a lot of apps are going to magically be accessible because of that, because so many of them depend on web views. So a lot of Android news happening.
And Jellybean will be here in July, folks.
Jellybean will be here in July.
Middle of this month.
Middle of this month, so stay tuned. We'll, I'm sure, have some news about that. The Nexus 7 tablet isn't on our list of things to talk about, so I'll talk really fast through this because I don't want to get too far off track. But basically, another tablet that Google has made that is low budget. I think the entry level tablet is $199 for the 8 gig model, and then there's a 16, or maybe it's a 4 gig, and then there's an 8, something like that. But it's $199.
I think it's 8 and 16, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. Not bad when you consider the cost of an iPad, you know.
Indeed.
It's less than half, so good stuff. We do have some Apple news. I promised that the show would not be all Apple, and I'm doing my best to hold to that. However, Apple is releasing OS X Mountain Lion at some point, and that's the operating system that they've been working on. It's rumored to be coming out on July the 19th, which is especially cool because it's my anniversary date. I'm sure they took that into consideration. Seriously, though, it'll be great to finally have it be here and have it be available to the public. Not sure that there's actual pricing details at this point, but we do have an article about that. One of the things about Mountain Lion is that it will phone home daily looking for security updates, and some people think that's fine. After all, why wouldn't you want to get the latest security updates? And other people are saying no, that you should be able to control whether or not the Mountain Lion contacts Apple seeking security updates. So, of course, there's a debate about
Apple won't let you control anything, will they? Heaven forbid.
Well, you know, you're kind of right. It's like, why are they complaining now? This is since when have they ever done this? And I guess to be fair, these debates have happened every Apple device. I remember with push notifications, there's a connection between your iDevice and Apple all the time, and people were saying, well, you should be able to turn it off, and you can turn all push notifications off, but you can't, like, opt out of that. It's really strange, but it's so Apple-ish. I don't know why there's this debate again, but
yeah,
any thoughts on Mountain
Lion? I don't use I don't use Lion. I don't use a Mac, but I suppose, you know, when you buy into the Apple ecosystem, that's what you buy into, and they it is very tightly controlled, rightly or wrongly, I suppose. But I'm interested that people are sort of saying this now, when, well, what did you expect from Apple, kind of thing.
I wonder, though, if people are a little more privacy conscious these days. I mean, maybe it's one of those things that, just like you know, checking off the I agree, yes, proceed boxes that no one ever reads but just does. And now people are kind of starting to look at that information and kind of realize what they've been agreeing to. Do you think that might factor in at all, or am I just trying to defend them?
I think it might be that you're right, people are starting to become more aware of it, but they're perhaps worrying about the wrong bit of it now. In the scheme of things, getting security updates, making sure that your system is protected, invulnerable, and therefore so is your information, doesn't seem to me like the bit of the privacy kind of conversation you really need to be worrying about. It's more to do with what you post on Facebook and what Facebook do with that information is, I think, the worrying end of things, perhaps. I don't know.
And one of the big things, actually, apropos privacy and breaches thereof, going a little bit out of order here, my apologies, Joe, is LinkedIn had a bit of an issue where they've had an oops and sort of divulged a bunch of passwords, or somehow some hacker got a hold of a gazillion, that's a technical number, a gazillion LinkedIn passwords. And people suddenly realize, geez, you know, this is vulnerable, and maybe I shouldn't have used the same password on my bank and my LinkedIn and on everything else, because now I've lost that password. And so, again, just sort of a brutal reminder of how important password strength and security and privacy really really are. Anyone affected by this? LinkedIn apparently sent out emails to people that were affected. Anyone got one of those emails?
No, but I know one of the things I thought about as I read was that they mentioned in the article the idea of changing your password every whatever quarter at least, and using, you know, a different password, at least 8 characters, letters, punctuation, numbers. And then they made the point that when people do this, you just can't remember them all. So then you need a place to store your passwords, and you need a password for that. And we're becoming, well, I guess, you know, I think the point that the article is making is there a better way to secure yourself in the cyber world than passwords? And I'm saying, well, that's at the moment all we have. And I know personally, I'm not as strict with passwords as I probably should be. And something like this could have made me think about that again today.
Well, I wonder if other methods of security will evolve. Like, for example, in Jelly Bean, just going back to Jelly Bean for a minute, we have, well, in fact, we've got it in Ice Cream Sandwich, we have facial unlock. Now, facial unlock is still not foolproof because you can fool it with photographs and all kinds of things. But, facial unlock is another way of doing it.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. It's the beginnings of a more secure way anyway. Even if you can fool it now, the chances are it'll get smarter, won't it?
Indeed.
Yeah.
Now, it would be neat if they could have a sound effect so the phone would react to someone's face, you know, have it scream in horror or something like that. That would be kind
of... But I've been able...
to believe that you can do it with your voice, can't you? And my voice is my password, all that kind of stuff.
I've been able to successfully use facial unlocked even though I'm blind, because all you do is hold the phone in front of you and just turn your head left to right until the phone detects it, you know. Yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
That's exciting. That really is, because it has gotten a bit ridiculous. I've been playing with password managers myself because I, like everyone who's on LinkedIn, has sort of been paranoid now about, geez, what have I compromised? Because I too use the same password for, I don't know, about 100 services. And then some of my others are more secure, but, you know, I don't, a lot of them are not that secure. And I thought, well, then I, you know, have to keep track of them, and how do I keep track of that? And one of them synchronizes through Dropbox, and I think, well, then, okay, but if my Dropbox password gets compromised, then you just kind of get into this endless sort of crazy loop. So if you are on LinkedIn, check this article out. There's a bunch of stuff. If you didn't get an email, of course, you know, depending on your own paranoia threshold, you may want to just update your passwords for the heck of it, especially if you're using anything else with the same password as LinkedIn. They say they've notified all of their customers that have been affected, but you just never know if they might have forgotten you. So worth maybe looking into, now that I've made everyone else worry. You know, I think this falls under the category of stuff happens, but unfortunately when it does, it's important to proactively react to it. I don't know. The iPhone, going back to Apple for a second, iOS 6, more features have, of course, been announced at the WWDC that we alluded to last month, and we have an article that plays a video, so we may not want to pull that up here during the show, but it plays a part of the keynote and also, of course, describes what has been included and hasn't been included. Major highlights, though, are Siri improvements. Siri can now sort restaurants based on reviews, based on Yelp reviews, which is kind of interesting because those are user-driven. You can also get sports information. And it's international. I guess they've finally expanded it so that people in outside of the U.S. can perform searches with it.
That's kind of nice of
Apple to finally
do. We'll actually get a crack at it now.
Yeah, you never know, you know. Yeah, it's found its way outside the U.S. Wow.
But I did find it very good. I actually did watch the video because I didn't hear the original presentation at all. So it was really good that you provided a link to that. I did find it very good that you were able to search for restaurants and it said, oh, there is X number near to you. And then you could actually, through another service, you could book a table even by doing that. I thought it was really good.
I have to say, though, Brian, we've had this for the last year with Android. You know, to be fair.
I'm sure you have, but it's, no. You know, it's a bit like one product against another.
It's not new is what I'm saying. It's marketing hype. I mean, you know, and Google Now in Jelly Bean is just as fantastic. But before that, there's loads of voice apps out there that tell you the nearest restaurant and various things quite easily.
New, but certainly Apple are doing a very good job at marketing.
I know.
Oh, big time. Yeah, they're all about marketing of it. And I think, you know, for those of us that have the iPhones and the iDevices, this is going to be a big thing. Even though it's kind of fun to watch these, you know, iOS versus Android debates, especially when it comes to things like Siri and whatnot. Because, of course, with Android, you have some control over what voice apps you use and install, and with the Apple, you don't. So for us Apple people, when Siri comes out with a big update like this, it's a big deal because
it provides us with a lot of
functionality, which is great.
They talk about the fragmentation argument, but you can only have Siri on the 4S. Wow. you know, any Android phone can have the other voice apps.
Well, let me ask all of you, since you guys are outside of the U.S., I don't remember a big deal being made during the keynote, and maybe I just wasn't paying attention, not this past keynote, but when they introduced Siri originally, about the fact that it didn't do a lot outside of the U.S. I just sort of assumed that it would and was shocked when I started hearing about people not being able to perform searches and that sort of thing. Was that well publicized, or was that sort of a shock to everyone that it's sort of U.S.-centric?
I don't think they said it during the keynote, or at least I don't remember, because I remember being quite excited and then a colleague telling me, you know, oh, it's not going to be much use to us. I think, I don't think people, certainly in Ireland anyway, and maybe the same for the UK, I don't think people got very excited about Siri anyway, other than being able to maybe send a message or, you know, use it for that type of stuff. It was more of a gimmick, I think, over here.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Stuart, I'd agree with that. The way it's being promoted quite a lot is it is a bit gimmicky. I remember, this is a bit extreme, but I remember it was going around on Twitter. There was an audio clip of a radio station, a radio broadcaster actually giving Siri the most outrageous instructions, and that's how it's being reported across the media. Whereas, in fact, I've done a lot of work over the years with voice recognition technology for users who really obviously can't use a keyboard or anything like that. And there is a very serious side to Siri, and a very it's going to be very advantageous if they can get it right, most certainly, but that's not the way it's being depicted, I don't think, at the moment.
Except on the silly TV ads, you know, where's my brother?
Yeah.
So they go, you know, and it knows who your brother is, of course, and everything else, and of course it doesn't do that right yet. And it's quite funny.
I had one funny Siri experience, and I don't know how I can't replicate this now, but you can, of course, establish relationships in your address book and say, you know, this is my son, this is my wife, this is my whatever, and it generalizes those. So it doesn't differentiate between husband and wife. It puts them as spouse or partner or something, and it doesn't differentiate between son or daughter. It puts them as child. So anyway, I forget what I had done. I was playing around with it, but then I said, call my wife, and it said, which wife? Which I thought was
which one of the seven wives?
Yeah, kind of scary. I don't know what I did for the other relationship, but apparently that was...
One very clever thing, which I haven't been able to get Siri to do when I've played with it on other phones, and I managed to do with Android, is I said to Iris, which is the kind of Siri equivalent on Android, I said to it, ring Becky, and it said, do you want to ring Rebecca? I thought, well, that was quite clever. You know, so I could actually lengthen, shorten names, you know.
Yeah.
So voice recognition, I mean, I think Google's voice recognition is some of the best, to be honest. It's really good.
I think it's great. They're competitive. They're very different. Google's been in it for a while, which I think is nice. I remember my first Android device, the only reason I bought it was because, well, not the only, but the way I justified it to myself was the speech recognition, which at the time wasn't, you know, we didn't have the 4S yet, so.
I have one more funny story about Siri. It's really funny. I went to train a Welsh guy, lovely guy he was, and he said, I want to learn about Siri, you know, very strong accent, you know. And he said, it's not working for me. Let me show you. And he said, he sent a text to his wife, and he said, can you pick me up? He said, Nora Ash, like that, you see. And it said, let me pick you up, Nora Ash. So it's quite not too good with accents.
Yeah. I think there was a clip going around YouTube last year with the Scottish accent on Siri.
Oh, I heard that. Yeah, in the lift.
Lots of problems. Very, very, very funny. It's well worth watching.
Yeah, yeah.
We should definitely get all these YouTube clips together. I think they would be fun. Sort of the anti-Siri commercials.
Yeah. Indeed, absolutely.
There's a couple of other features in iOS 6 that I just quickly wanted to mention, one of which I wasn't initially excited about, but I kind of am now, called Passbook. And basically what you can do is put various passes into Passbook. For example, airline tickets or sports stadium tickets or flight ticket. Did I say flight tickets already? Coupons, discount cards, things like that. You add this to your virtual Passbook, and then you have access to those things. The really neat thing, though, is that it's dynamic. So, for example, if you add a boarding pass for a flight and your gate changes, then when you pull up the boarding pass, it shows the revised gate on the boarding pass. Or if you add your, for example, Starbucks, which is uber popular, I think, everywhere in the world, but especially where I am. I think we have like three of them right near me. If you add your Starbucks card to your Passbook, it's smart enough to know that when you go into Starbucks, on your lock screen will be that card. So it senses, based on your location, which card you probably are going to want, and makes that card available on your lock screen. And if that's the one you, in fact, want, you can just slide across to unlock, pay for your coffee or whatever, and leave and go. And
then when you go to the... really clever. Actually,
yeah,
all the things kind of that were in the page that you showed us, the thing that leapt out at me as being the most useful.
Does that bother any of you guys? You know, if somebody picked your phone up in the Starbucks, you know, and then sort of slid to unlock it and clicked on it and things like that, be fun, wouldn't it?
I think you can password protect it. There is you can make it that simple, or else you can. I think you can have a pin lock on it. I think it's a very valid point. It's one of those things, like we were mentioning earlier, to think about. What if you lose your phone? What data can you possibly, be
you'd
losing?
Have to have a quick way of blocking it, wouldn't you?
One of the things I thought in relation to Passbook was, you know, how many of us have been left at a boarding gate and you're told somebody will come for you when the flight is ready, and the flight is delayed and delayed, and you're wondering, I wonder what's happening, that you might at least be able to check into your Passbook and see, you know, flight delayed by half an hour. I just thought it might be useful in that respect as well.
Absolutely.
You know, while you're waiting for someone to come back to you.
That's a fantastic thing. Go ahead.
Getting the right card in the right place. I mean, I don't know what it's like for you guys, but I've got kind of, you know, Boots card and a Sainsbury's card, or, you know, UK kind of grocery stores, whatever. And I could spend my life just rummaging around trying to find the right one for the right store, but presumably this would kind of totally sort that problem out.
Yeah, I'm sure it would. It sounds great.
Yeah.
And I like that can be done from the lock screen. Starbucks does have a mobile card already, but I've got to unlock my phone, and it's in my shopping folder, and then I get into that, and then it has to pull down the latest account balance, and then I have So I have to wait a few seconds and click to... I mean, by the time I'm done with all of this, you know, everyone in line behind me hates me. So I think this will be...
So, I suppose, you know, one of the real important things for this will be how quickly vendors are going to buy into it, you know, how quickly people will make things available on Passbook. And I mean, you know, when they do, it'll be brilliant. But I guess it's just a matter of waiting for that to happen. And hopefully it happens fairly quickly.
And it may not, Stuart. I mean, if you compare, for example, the amount of books on iBooks compared to Kindle.
Oh, sure.
You know, it's just not happened, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope the major kind of retailers will do it. Again, it may be a US type thing for a while. Maybe it'll take a little while to get to this part of the world. I don't know.
I think this is possibly the start of a big change that's starting to happen. We're going to see more and more store cards, and then I think payments happening, you know, by swiping your phone, you know, Google Wallet and PayPal.
Google Wallet and stuff,
It seems to be kind of just gathering on the horizon, all these things kind of just, you know, amassing. I think we're going to start to see this really big time in the next couple of years.
These are exciting times for sure. Just to go away a little bit from Apple, we'll come back to Apple, but I want to try to minimize all the hate mail that I'm sure poor Lisa gets. We have a couple of JAWS sort of related announcements that have come out. JAWS 13.0.924, the May update, has been released. So if you're a JAWS 13 user, I'm assuming there's no reason you wouldn't want to get this update. Does anyone know what was addressed in this?
The Braille drivers, I think, for the Pappenmeyer display is one of the big things. So some of those new drivers are now usable.
Yeah.
A couple of other bug fixes, but
Firefox bug fixes as well, particularly when posting things on Facebook and signing into Facebook were corrected there.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's a lot of people are into Facebook. We also have a release of JSA 10.
Shall I take this one?
I think you should take that one.
This is your game.
Okay. So JSA 10 makes the software JAWS for Windows 13 and Dragon Pro 11.5 compatible. So we're up to JSA version 10 now. The main new feature in this version, apart from making all of our other features compatible with JAWS 13, was something called a custom menu feature. If you can imagine that a lot of this technology is being used not just by people who are physically disabled and those who are in employment, because they often find dictating to their computers much easier than typing, but it's also being used by people with cognitive difficulties, language difficulties, and other learning challenges. And so what the custom menu does is it actually brings up a list of common tasks that a trainer can customize for a user. So if you're a trainer and you're with a user who has such a difficulty, you might find that your client cannot remember to say, for example, start Word or start Outlook, which are our commands in order to launch those applications. They might not be able to say the command speak line to read the current line just because it's either difficult to say or they can't remember to say it. So what you can do is the trainer can actually create a list of all the common actions that a person is typically able to do or wants to be able to do. So, for example, there's a basic macro builder in there, so the trainer can create a little script to press some keystrokes. You can launch a JAWS script, you can run a web page or an application, those sorts of things. So basically what the experience is that a user will start their computer and they will either say something like main menu or back to the beginning, and the custom menu feature will appear. And then all they've got to do then is to say move down until they get to the right item that they're interested in. And then they can say confirm that. So this was actually developed by specific request from trainers of JSA technology. So that was the main sort of focus behind this release, which is receiving a lot of good acclaim at the moment. I should just say that TNT, as of last week, TNT Consultancy, the developing company of JSA, ceased trading. And so the company which has now taken over, certainly in the UK, Australia, and the rest of the world, other than the United States and Canada, is called Aztec, which is Assistive Technology Solutions Limited. And that is a new company, and they will be taking the development of JSA and the other J products forward. In the United States and Canada, then it's Next Generation Technologies who are the master distributors there. And they work closely with us anyway to not only suggest features, but also in terms of beta testing, that sort of thing.
Well, having been a trainer before, I've seen JSA literally change lives. It's an incredible, incredible product that's really made such a huge impact. And so you should be very proud of that one. It's an incredible thing.
I mean, I would completely echo that. We've seen it here in Ireland. We've had people use it. It is amazing. I never believed until I saw JSA. I used to think, voice recognition doesn't really work. And after seeing JSA, I wanted to use it myself and not type. It is amazing.
It truly is. It's incredible.
Well, thank you for that. We're going to be producing more features for it. In fact, I know we are in the near future.
It'll be interesting to see where these things go in a couple of years when, of course, everything will be all metro and you can have things on your tablet. And I don't know. It's fascinating to see where these things are going.
The more portable you can make these things, the better. I mean, a lot of our users, including myself, because we don't need to see the screen, we can actually be talking to the computer and hearing what's going on through JAWS in another room or outside or somewhere if you use a wireless headset. So if you actually make the unit portable as well and be able to take it somewhere and be able to dictate into it and control it, that's going to be great. So, yeah, exciting times ahead there, I think.
In other access news, NVDA 2012.2.1 has also been released. So if you're an NVDA user, you should get that update. There's also some interesting things on Twitter. They've been tweeting various statistics about where NVDA use is happening. Where they're extrapolating this information from is when NVDA checks for updates. They sort of keep track of which country is that request is coming from, and have sort of created some interesting demographics about how many people run it on a daily basis and roughly where they are. Not specific, but in terms of which countries they're in. And it's kind of fascinating to me anyway to see that information, and it'll be fun to sort of monitor it over time. But if you're an NVDA user, definitely get the update. Anyone have info on what the update includes? There's Adobe PDF compatibility, right?
Yeah, it's mostly to do with PDF compatibility. And I was going to say one thing, though, that also a Portuguese company called Tiflatecnia, I'm not sure how to spell that at the moment, have produced a driver for the Nuance voices for the NVDA. So if you don't like eSpeak for any reason, you can now get Daniel and Serena and the Old Faithfuls, and you can buy one license for all of the Nuance voices. And we sell them in the UK.
And there's quite a lot of positive info about that. And people are really happy to finally be able to get back to these other voices.
Yeah.
So that's very exciting. I know we're just about at the 2 o'clock Eastern, I'm sorry, 2 o'clock Central, 3 o'clock Eastern time, which is normally the end time of our show. I think unless Lisa stops me, we might go a few minutes over just because we started a few minutes late. I did want to mention that if you have wanted to get an iPhone, but you haven't wanted to pay AT&T or get locked into any sort of a contract, or if your credit perhaps is not such that you can get a contract through AT&T, you now can get a prepaid iPhone in the U.S. through Cricket. They finally announced that, and there's a couple of other prepaid carriers that are going to be offering the iPhone as well. And so that's kind of interesting. You pay a lot more for the phone because it isn't subsidized as it would be under contract. But you can use it through that prepaid service. So very exciting stuff.
I'd be curious to know how that works in the UK. I'm thinking specifically, I don't know, Lanny, we haven't heard from you lately. As a rule, is the phone service, is it prepaid? Is it, how does that work?
You know, I've got no idea which is the more popular in the UK, but you can certainly choose between a contract, usually of 18 or 24 months, or what we call pay-as-you-go, so you buy the phone outright and then top it up with credit as and when you need it. But I don't know, guys, do you have any idea what the sort of breakdown of...
Because over here, it's very definitive. It's, you don't get, very rarely do you hear about people buying a phone and then, you know, taking it to a provider. It's a Verizon phone or a Sprint phone or whatever.
I always buy my phones outright because I think you pay way over the odds with a contract. So I tend to get a SIM-only contract and then buy my phones outright anyway.
Okay. Yeah, I never really realised how bad that was until I got my iPhone last year. Now I'm with you.
You should have just bought an iPhone and put a SIM in it.
Yeah, I really should have done, you're right.
We've similar to the UK, I suppose. In Ireland, the carriers, it's either bill pay, and you know, for the more expensive phones, people tend to go that way, and you're tied into an 18 or 24 month contract, or the pay as you go, which is just obviously pay for your credit as you use it, as Leonie just mentioned. Yeah.
Well, here in the U.S., of course, one of the issues has been for quite some time that the only carrier we've been able to use has been AT&T, and then that changed to also include Verizon, and then with the 4S Sprint. So things have changed pretty dramatically. But in contrast, I think, to the rest of the world, which uses GSM SIM-based technology, the U.S. has a lot of these CDMA-type carriers, and the iPhone was not possible to be used on any of those. So this is, for us, this is really exciting that you actually can choose different carriers, finally.
For those people in the UK who eat data like I do, because I use 3G data like it's going out of fashion, GIFGAF is the best one to get. You can get a GIFGAF SIM card, gifgaf.com, GIFFGAFF.com, and it's based on O2 in the UK, and £10 a month gets you unlimited data, unlimited text, and about 150 minutes.
That's way better than the $15 I pay for my 300 megabytes that I get. The other thing I wanted to mention real quickly is a real exciting app. A lot of people excited about this. If you're in the U.S., if you're outside the U.S., you probably don't care about this as much, is the NFB Newsline app, the NFB Newsline service, which has been available to the blind within the U.S. for quite some time, has now gone iPhone, and you can now get the app, which will allow you to read Newsline articles and have favorites and manage all of your various Newsline things right from your iDevice. Very, very exciting news if you're an a Newsline subscriber.
Yeah, and the programs for both national conventions were made available through that. And I think the way they do TV listings is kind of interesting, because if there's a channel that you like, instead of seeing everything that's on at 8 o'clock, you can look at the day's lineup for that channel. I wasn't really sure how this was going to be or how I was going to feel about it. I thought you were going to have, for example, a next button, and you were going to have to find it and double tap it. And, you know, that's fine, but if I'm skimming and I just want to know the basic headings, you know, I like moving by headings, for example, on a web page. And this is set up in a way that's very neat. All you have to do is set your rotor so that flicking down will move you by headings, and you can go into one particular category like local news, and maybe there are 18 articles, and you can just flick down to see the title of each of those articles and then go in from there to see if it's something that you're interested in. And it seems to really be an app that has become quite popular despite affiliation. Some people are staunch ACB or NFB or staunch, I don't want either of them, you know. And it seems like everyone or, you know, many, many people are using and benefiting from this app.
Well, I just wonder why you need an app for it anyway, because it strikes me as it's just like a web page.
It is.
You know, why do NFB and ACB do all this stuff? You know, why not just put it on the web?
Well, and they can and they have. But if you... I think it's more about the way that information is presented. If it's on the web, you need to either sign in or have your information saved. And I think it's really a matter of interface, because this is easier, simpler, faster to navigate than than a web browser. I was talking to someone the other week, and they said that they really weren't even using their Victor Reader Stream anymore. And I said, oh, I am. I said, because, you know, I want to be able to sometimes go from chapter to chapter or section to section. And I said, until the apps that I use for reading do it and do it seamlessly, I'm going to stay with what I have. And this does it that way.
Is there a decent Daisy app for the iPhone? I don't know of one. There is one for Android called Darwin Reader, but I don't know of one for the iPhone.
I don't know if...
There's a few. Yeah. There's
Daisy to Go. Is it called Daisy? Yeah. No. Yeah. In Daisy.
Daisy Box, is that another one, I think? Well, right now, there seems
to... Daisy Worm as well, but...
Yeah, at least here, there seem to be Daisy apps that are based on the program you're using. For example, Bookshare has Read to Go. Learning Ally has... Yeah. Uh-oh, I don't remember the name of theirs, but... So it's not so much... At least here, is there a decent Daisy app? Is there an app that's usable on books and materials from various places?
But the Darwin Reader one would be good, though.
Yeah. Darwin Reader is fantastic. I haven't used my stream for years.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I like kind of being able to hit a button on the fly, and at least in the NFB Newsline app, they've made this very simple with the flick down gesture to get to the next heading rather than stopping and locating a button.
Can you tell I want to get away from... Can you tell I want to get away from blindy apps?
Absolutely.
I'm absolutely with you there, but the thing I find is that I read until I kind of doze off last thing at night.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And if I've then got to wake up and go tapping around the screen to find the stop button, I'm
exactly.
Like, where's my screen? I can reach under the pillow and just nail a button and I'm sorted.
That's called a sleep timer, Leonie. That's what I use.
Yeah, but really, I don't know how long it's going to take me to go to sleep.
How long it's going to take.
Yeah.
And my
thing... Yeah, fair
I'm
enough,
totally
I mean.
With you otherwise, Steve. I really am. I'm totally with you, but, you know...
For me, it's about productivity and enjoyment. And if a blindness piece of equipment or a blindness app is going to do it, great. If a mainstream is going to do it better and often
I think it's
less
all about
expensively,
choice.
Just as great. Yeah.
It's about what suits people, and it's about catering for a very, I guess, broad spectrum of people. And I suppose, yeah, here in Ireland, okay, a lot of people are turning to iDevices, certainly. But I think the Stream and the Plex Talk and other products like it still very much have their place, you know.
I just saw that Enjoy the Stream at Summer at the lowest price. Of course, it's only for the US, isn't it?
So there is, and I guess that's the final thing I'll mention today, that right now, of course, these are things that happened in June, and we're in July. The NFB convention, National Federation of the Blind convention, is winding down, and the American Council of the Blind ACB convention is winding up. And so I think we're going to have a very exciting Sarah Spectives next month, because of course there's all kinds of announcements and news coming out of those conventions, and as everyone was talking, I kind of was thinking in my head, oh, there was this announcement, and there was this announcement that I've been reading about over the past few days on Twitter and various releases. So, of course, stay tuned, as we'll cover, hopefully, all of that.
I was listening to the stream of the NFB convention yesterday, and I do love these American conferences. We don't have anything like that. I love the atmosphere of it, and it's just brilliant.
I must admit, I don't really. It sounds a bit like a religion to me, but... You know, it's preachy stuff, you know.
Well,
there's a whole kind of a culture around them, isn't there?
Yeah.
There is.
There are a lot of fun to go to.
Oh, they're tons of fun to go to. Hearing them is really good, but it's a sad substitute, because then, of course, there are the exhibit halls where you pay for the pleasure of being mauled by other people trying to get ahead of you to the tables of stuff, but it's pretty neat. I really think if the world's guide dogs were going to strike over any one issue, it would be exhibit halls.
Yes.
That's here or there. If you do like to listen to convention coverage, we encourage you to check that out on iBlink Radio. You can either listen from within Samnet if you're a Samnet member, or you can listen via the free iBlink app for iPhone and Android. I'd also like to remind you that you are more than welcome to follow us on Twitter. There are Twitter links for each of our guests, and you can follow Serospectives on Twitter. It's just Serospectives, Serospectives, all one word. And also, this will probably be the last reminder that you will get that Monday is the deadline for our contest, where you can win a smoker as well as the iGrill thermometer and some pretty nice meats to go along with it, so that you can be the life of your next bash.
And you can invite your host.
There you go.
Just saying.
That sounds interesting. Win a smoker.
Well, we did a thing.
What
in,
is a smoker? What is a smoker?
What condition will the meat be in when it arrives in Ireland?
What?
You need
is it what we call a barbecue,
to...
is it?
You need to listen to the Serospectives, where we talked all about smokers with Mike Calvo. It's a unit that uses wood chips, and it has three racks. Seems like it's the size of a small refrigerator. And items are placed in there and apparently come out pretty fine.
I see. Yeah.
It's really yummy.
Hey, Steve, as we go around the horn, we've talked all about the stuff that's been popular in the U.S. Let's get an idea from each one of our panelists. What is the big story outside of the U.S. in technology? What is really fueling what's going on in your neck of the woods? And what are your concerns for accessibility? Because we've covered some U.S. stories, but the whole point here is to have an idea that there are things outside the U.S. that are just as important for accessibility and other things.
Well, maybe I'll start to say that in where we are at the moment. I think for people in Ireland, the cost of assistive technology is always an issue. The price of screen reading technology. And finding non-touch screen phones that don't have a steep learning curve. I think Android is, I know Steve is a major Android person, and I totally respect that, but I think with Android it's key to get the right device that suits the person. And I don't know that we, certainly in Ireland, we've actually found that yet, because the providers don't have a huge selection. And I think that's a big thing, just to get simple to use devices into the hands of older people as we go forward.
I do agree with you, Stuart. I'd actually take it even further than that. I think that for me, my biggest concern as a mobile phone reseller, because although I'm a geek, I like to make things easy for people that are not geeks. And my biggest concern is trying to allay the fear that blind people have of touchscreens in the first place. You know, I've got this flat bit of glass. What do I do with it? We all can use iPhones. We can use Androids. So it's not us that we're talking about. It's you know, elderly or blind people that aren't dexterous. They think, how am I going to use this flat bit of glass? What am I going to do with it? And that's, for me, the hardest thing as a trainer is to allay that fear and to say to people, you know, yes, you can use touch screens, and particularly the iPhone, and with Jelly Bean, Android will be the same, that you don't have to be precise on where you hit and things like that. And that is a major concern to me.
Yeah.
Brian?
I think the cost of the technology and the training, Stuart alluded to the technology there, but I think that's probably the main concern among many visually impaired people in the UK. It's the thing that I've heard most often over the years, that the technology is too expensive. And from a development point of view, I can understand why that is, but also from a visual impairment point of view, because I am visually impaired, I also understand that it's very expensive. And it is a tribute to companies like Ceratech and like other assistive technology companies that they are offering now either payment, the ability to spread payments over a period, or reducing the cost of training, as Freedom Scientific have done. I think that's great. But to actually get low cost, very high quality training still is a big concern, I think, among many people.
Absolutely. Lenny?
I actually heard some news today that really caught my attention. It was from a chap called Robin Christofferson, who I'm sure the other three will know of. He works for a charity in the UK called AbilityNet. And early this morning, he gave a presentation in which he said that Apple had actually approached AbilityNet to talk to them about repurposing the iPhones that are apparently quite regularly left behind in lost property stalls and brought back to Apple stores, and nobody reclaims within the kind of legal 30-day requirement, and they're considering putting together a program, I gather, where those can be reconditioned and made available to people with disabilities, presumably at you know, significant discount, which I thought was
a good idea.
Terrific gesture. I think really hot off the press from AbilityNet, but you know what, that was really exciting news if that comes to pass.
Yeah, I mean, that's what excites me in a way about Android, in the sense that, you know, I'm not starting the Apple Android debate again. But one good thing about Android is the price of the phones. You know, you can get an Android phone with ice cream sandwich on it now for less than £200, and you can't an iPhone unless you go contract or whatever. And that really concerns me, the expense of the iPhone, even, you know, because it's so accessible, but it's out of a lot of people's range. But there are more Android phones coming a lot cheaper.
And again, I think we're going to have that debate is going to start at some point, I think, soon, especially as we have, you know, these new tablets and whatever we can. Yeah. But, you know, what's nice about it is we can start having these debates about price and about, you know, user choice, instead of, you know, this is the only technology that's available to me right now. So that's, to me, very exciting, because the debate, the lines for that debate sort of shift to, you know, what can I afford, what do I need, versus, you know, what's available to me. On that note, though, before we go down that path, I want to thank everyone again for joining us for this month in tech on Sarah Spectres, and hope that you join us all next month for what will hopefully be an exciting show, again, with all kinds of tech news and information coming out of the conventions. And Lisa, I will go ahead and turn it over to you, but thank you to our guests and to all of the audience who have joined in with us live or that hear us on the podcast.
I think we've just about covered everything. Again, thanks to our guests and to bringing us perspectives that we may not have even been aware of. I know myself, just getting ready to do this particular podcast, I saw how similar but how different some things were. They were very generous in forgiving me my time conversion disorder, and were very patient with me. And then we had like three different times for the podcast, except not in my mind. So anyway, and also when I was getting together show notes and writing out the contact info, I had all of them written as twitter.com, and I was just about ready to send, and I thought, wait a minute, that's not going to get me anywhere, and I had to go back and do twitter.co.uk. And I think sometimes living in the US, that we can be a little insular.
It isn't twitter.co.uk, though. It's twitter.com, it's wrong anyway.
I went, okay, well, the Twitter's under there, and I pulled up I pulled up one of you in twitter.co.uk.
They should all be twitter.com, Lisa.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
wish I hadn't taken us down that path, but still a learning experience all the same.
We'll forgive you, won't we?
Good deal. I'd like to also remind any of our listeners, if you are listening live, you are welcome to come into the SAMNet chat in the tech room, where some of the things discussed here and probably many others will be discussed. And we thank you for listening and keep on enjoying your summer.